It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now we discuss light pollution, artificial light at night that scientists say disrupt natural wildlife patterns. They affect our sleep cycles, obscure our ability to see the stars, the night sky. Join in on light pollution, its impact on the environment, what you're doing about it. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Paul Bogard is here, Associate Professor of English and Environmental Studies at Hamline University in St. Paul, Minnesota, author of several books on artificial light in the night sky. Paul, welcome to the Ideas Network.
It's great to be here.
Well, tell us a bit about your origin story with light pollution. How did you first become aware of its impact?
Yeah, I mean, I was so lucky. I grew up in Minneapolis, but we've always had a cabin up north, you know, as we say. And so I grew up with that firsthand experience of a real night sky. And later in life, when I was looking for something to write about, I was actually living down in New Mexico and thought, well, I'm going to learn all the constellations. And when I walked outside to see the constellations that I was reading about at the time, I realized quickly that I could not see them because of light pollution. And quickly from there, you start to learn about all the other costs and impacts of from light pollution.
When I think of pollution, the word, I usually think of chemicals leaching into places where they shouldn't be. Can light pollution really be called or classified as a pollution?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that we could talk about. Some people, you know, say that it's not the same kind of pollution, but I like to think of it as something that is getting in the way of our experience of the natural world. We're polluting the sky with light. We're polluting our lives at night with lights. And it's a different kind of pollution, but it's still a pollution.
How do you know that all of the artificial light that we create is affecting the natural world? What do scientists have discovered on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the issue that really drives me the most, is their impact to our fellow creatures and to the natural world. I think the thing that stands out to me is what a biologist told me once, where he said, you know, all life evolved with bright days and dark nights, and we need both. You know, we know that we need light. Light is good for us, but we also need darkness. And there's really no creature that has evolved to, including human beings, to deal with all this artificial light. It has a real impact on animals that are nocturnal. So they've evolved to rely on darkness, essentially, or even crepuscular, those animals that are most active at dawn and dusk. And the light, when we shine it into their habitat, it essentially destroys that habitat for those animals.
So it could really affect bats in particular, I would imagine.
Has a real impact on bats. I mean, the research that we know, some bats seem to benefit from having more light, but most bats don't. And I think that when we talk about the research, the impact to wildlife and animals in the natural world, there is growing evidence, but there's not a ton of evidence about this. But it seems like every new study that comes out confirms this idea that our overuse and misuse of artificial light at night has a real negative impact on the life around us.
If light pollution is getting worse, as they say, what is the culprit? What can we point to that is causing increased light pollution?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. It's, you know, there are more and more of us, so more and more people everywhere, and we bring our lights with us. There's also been a change in technology where we're moving from electric lighting to electronic lighting, namely LED lighting, which... The good part about LEDs is that they are more efficient and they have great promise in that they could be very programmable, which could help us with the issue of light pollution. But on the negative side, they tend to be brighter and more intense. And so as we switch to LED lights, the problem in many places has just gotten worse.
And there is such, there's a lot of drive and pressure on consumers to switch to LEDs because they are so highly energy efficient and they use a lot less energy than the old, you know, incandescent lights. But that, what I hear from you, is also a tricky trade-off.
Well, I think it is. We can distinguish between sort of the LEDs that we're encouraged to buy for our, inside our homes and that kind of thing. And I would, continue to encourage people to do that. But it's really the LEDs in our streetlights, for example. And unfortunately, the cities that adopted LEDs early are the ones that have caused the most problem, because those LEDs tend to be heavy in what we call blue rich white light. So it's kind of exactly the kind of light that humans and any other form of life doesn't want to see at night, kind of the blue light. The good news is that LEDs are evolving. And so some of the cities that have more recently adopted LEDs have chosen LEDs that are better for us, just essentially warmer light than those first. So there's so many instances with light pollution and our use of light where there are choices to be made. And a big part of what I and anybody else who's interested in this is just trying to help people understand that we do have choices to make about our use of light at night.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment as we talk about light pollution, its effects on the world around us. Paul Bogard is here, Associate Professor of English and Environmental Studies at Hamline University. You can join in on light pollution, light trespass, glare, sky glow, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Paul, you talk about cities, and sometimes you hear, mayors and city officials say they want to improve lighting in an area so that it helps make the neighborhood safer with, less crime, so that they're connecting light with less crime. How do you balance street lighting with crime issues and safer streets opposed to the issues around light pollution?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm just chuckling a little because we're actually dealing with that right now in Minneapolis.
I was going to mention, but I was like, oh, I'll let him go there if he wants.
right. Yeah. I think it's important to say that, if anybody who's concerned about light pollution, it's not an issue of let's not have lights. It's an issue of how we're going to use the light, what kind of lights, when we're going to use it, and that kind of thing. So nobody is opposed to having lighting that can increase people's safety. It's just that we tend to take what is actually a pretty complex issue, which is the relationship between light at night and safety and crime and that kind of thing, and reduce it to light is good, dark is bad, and so more light is better. And that just is not, there's no research that would support that. The relationships between having more light and less crime really are not supported. And so the question is, how can we have the light that we want and need, and that helps people feel safer, which isn't the same thing as actually being safer, but it's important, helps people feel safer. How can we have that without making all these other problems that are associated with light pollution worse?
Let's take a call now. Mike in Walworth County. Mike, hi, what's on your mind about light pollution?
Good morning. This is one of my all-time pet peeves. I used to work in a school district, and back in the 20 years ago, we were installing what was called full spectrum lighting. And my mother, when I gave her a full spectrum light, the first thing she told me was she could read better, which is a good thing. But what I find is that when people used to put outdoor lighting, they used to call them bug lights, which are amber. And amber light basically allows you to keep your night vision. The problem with the blue lighting is it's a technical term called scotopic lumens. You lose your night vision. It's similar to having waking up in the morning and turning on your bathroom light. Your retina closes. The biggest problem is with automobiles. When we have these vehicles that have these, I also call it operating room lighting, they can see the road, but the people who are driving in the opposite way get blinded, and I'm surprised there aren't any lawsuits, basically, that this light is blinding other drivers. But it's healthy inside, indoors, where you want to have blue light, where you can have more visual acuity and you can see better. But better light outside actually steals your night vision, because once you're out of that glow, your retinas can't cover. So I would like to encourage the dark sky. There's a group of people that are trying to get dark sky communities, and I think those people should also join in this
band together.
Yes.
Mike, thank you for that. Paul, what are your insights on car headlights and the impact they have?
I mean, I think I've had, like your caller and like I'm guessing a lot of your listeners, have that experience of being blinded by those headlights. And I think something definitely needs to be done about that. It also points to this issue of glare that you mentioned. And that's a great example of how just having brighter lights doesn't automatically make us safer. It actually makes it harder for us to see outside, which is kind of going against the idea of safety.
We have Hamline University Associate Professor and Co-Director of Environmental Studies, Paul Bogard, our guide to light pollution and what to do about it. Join in on what you wonder about the effects of artificial light on humans and animals. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore the compounding issues with light pollution from things like car headlights, as we've been talking about, street lamps, offices, outdoor advertising. According to the New World Atlas of Artificial Night Sky Brightness, 99% of Americans and Europeans live under light-polluted sky. By the way, thanks to Matt and Rudolph, who called in to suggest we talk about this issue during our recent caller-only program. Matt concerned about LEDs. Join in what you notice with light pollution, 800-642-1234. We have Hamline University Environmental Studies faculty and author on this issue, Paul Bogard, who stays with us. Let's bring in Tom now in Green Bay. Tom, what are your thoughts?
Good morning. I have a comment and a question. I see a lot of lights being added to the sides of buildings when you're driving down the road. Huge lights just seem to blind you. And there's a code against having light wash, but it doesn't seem to be enforced anywhere. Why isn't that being enforced?
Tom, thank you. Paul, do you have any knowledge there about lights on buildings and code?
I think what he's referring to is the use of what are called wall packs. They're these lights that people put on the sides of buildings. And again, it goes back to this idea of choice. There are different kinds of wall packs. You can get the kinds that your caller's talking about that are, you know, very bright and glary and contribute to the problem. Or you can buy, if you want lights on the side of your building, you can buy lights that are wall packs that are shielded and directed down toward the ground where you actually need the light. So you have a choice there. And then on the issue of enforcement, I think this is a real problem in that, you know, I don't honestly know of any community that has a sort of light ordinance enforcement division or anything like that. So I think, though, that gets to the issue of education. And the more people like your caller who see that kind of thing and object to it and contact their leaders, their community officials and that kind of thing, that's one way that will make a real difference on this problem.
You know, this is the time when people will be putting up holiday lights. Have we gone overboard with these displays?
You could make that case, I guess, in some ways. You know, I really love the holiday lights. I'm a traditionalist. We don't do it until after Thanksgiving here, but I'm excited to put up candles in the windows and some lights outside. So I love it. And I love that display. And again, you know, somebody who's concerned like me with light pollution is not saying, you know, we can't have, you know, holiday lights or something like that. That's not the issue at all. Like, you know, light at night can really be quite beautiful. It's just that in our overuse and misuse of artificial light at night, we create all these other problems.
You know, as we talked about lighting on the sides of buildings, I think about light trespass, which is another type of light pollution, especially if, you know, a neighbor's outdoor lighting is bothering your sleep, or perhaps it's reminding you of like aircraft runway lights. And I know you're not a psychologist, but how do you broach that if your neighbor has light trespass on you?
Yeah, I mean, I think light trespass is such a great issue, great subject for us, because it's such a good example that so many people will immediately think, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's that, you know, the neighbor's light that shines into your house.
Into your bedroom.
Into your bedroom, you know, and, you know, it's unfortunately, we, you know, we put the responsibility on the person whose house is being lit up, like, oh, you're supposed to buy shades and block it out, rather than say, if you're going to use light, you have to control it and, you know, keep it from trespassing on your neighbors. So that is a real issue. I think, you know, in terms of talking to your neighbor, that's a whole can of worms that, you know, I'm sure it's the same in Wisconsin. You know, Minnesotans have a hard time talking about those things, but there's some good advice about that. If you go to the International Dark Sky Association website, which is darksky.org, they have some really good advice about how to broach that subject. And I've heard a lot of success stories where, you know, essentially the neighbor didn't realize that their lights were causing this kind of problem. And once they understood that, they were happy to correct it.
Paul Bogard, our guide on light pollution on the faculty at Hamline University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Sharon in Minocqua. Sharon, hi, go ahead.
Hello, hello, good morning. This is such a great topic and it's so close to my heart. I'm a wildlife biologist that worked on two projects, one in Georgia on sea turtles and one in Hawaii on seabirds. And light pollution really is, there's copious amounts of data already demonstrating the impacts of light, artificial light on wildlife, and especially in their migratory patterns. You know, seabirds in Hawaii were colliding directly with light because they were just attracted to them. Animals, you know, as your guest speaker, who's wonderful, mentioned, you know, we all evolved having, you know, daylight hours and then a dark sky. We haven't been able to, understand that this is, you know, that we're having devastating impacts on wildlife. You know, the one thing that I mentioned to your caller, you know, the earlier, is the, we think about more of our impacts of lights on vertebrates, but probably the greatest impact is on nocturnal insects. And it's just devastating for those populations because of disorientation as well as death. And it's also reflective in the decline of all the nocturnal species, which include bats and birds.
Sharon, thank you so much for bringing that to us. Paul, is there anything that you want to add there, Sharon, from that, wildlife biologist perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, this is, you know, the thing that drives me the most. I think a couple things. One is what she says about the impact of nocturnal insects is huge. There seem to be a real decline in insects around the world where they've been studied, and that has ramifications up and down the food chain, really serious issue. And the other thing is the impact of bird migration. We have most birds migrate at night in North America, more than 400 species, and they're often drawn off course by our bright lights. It has a real significant impact. A lot of the birds that run into our windows during the day were drawn off course by our bright lights at night. And so that's where you see the efforts to control lighting in cities during migratory season, especially. And homeowners can be a part of that as well, part of that effort.
We have less than a minute left. Some people might feel unsafe in the dark. What advice would you offer them to become more comfortable with the night?
Yeah, it's in some ways the question, because at kind of a basic level, I think human beings are afraid of the dark. And I think I would encourage people to become educated on the issue and just know that we can have light where we need it, but we don't need to be blasting it up into the sky or into our neighbors' bedrooms or that kind of thing. And that the costs of our overuse and misuse of light are so high. They have such an impact on the life around us. And so let's be good neighbors. Let's use light thoughtfully and responsibly, but not overuse it.
Paul, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Paul Bogard is an associate professor of English and environmental studies at Hamline University in St. Paul, Minnesota, author of several books on artificial light in the night sky. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.